The next tape is the story of Reverend Millen. It is the second in a series of two tapes, and if you have not heard the first tape, How the Communists Took Over, I'd recommend that you hear that first, and then listen to the second tape as Reverend Millen tells what happened when he was arrested by the Chinese communists, and when he saw the reality of what communism is all about. Now, if you talk to people who are in Angola, they'll tell you the same story. If you'll talk to people who were Eastern Europe when the communists took over, they'll tell you the same sorts of stories. If you talk to the young men who came back, our young men who came back from Korea after the brainwashing that they experienced, they'll tell you the same story. The people, our soldiers who were in Vietnam, they'll tell you similar stories. The people in Afghanistan will tell you similar stories. Communism has never changed. It will never change. And to understand the very essence of communism, here is Reverend Millen giving you a first-hand account of what actually transpired in his life after he was arrested by the communists.
This afternoon's talk is in the interests of helping us to understand something more of the atmosphere of communism rather than its theories. Although this afternoon's talk will also contain something in the way of theory as taught in a communist indoctrination class. A very wealthy British firm made its fortune out of slogans, as so often fortunes are made out of slogans. And the slogan was, "You can't be optimistic if you have missed the optics." And with this they sold many, many pairs of spectacles to people who never needed them. What we have to say in these meetings is also in the interests of clearing away the mists, so that we who go out to others may not be hazy in the thing which we are presenting, but may understand, that we may know the devices of the devil. We should not be ignorant of his devices. We should know from whence this thing comes. And if you have never been convinced before, I think you will be before we're finished this afternoon, that there is no other source from which this thing called communism could possibly stem but from the very depths of hell itself. It is the most devilish and fiendish thing that was ever conceived in the mind of man or devil. Yesterday afternoon I tried to picture for you the way in which the communists took over China and the way in which they take over unsuspecting peoples, first by infiltration. And the way in which that was done, of course, was by a literature program. I think, for instance, of a young man to whom I taught the English language. His first lessons in English were given by me myself. And that boy grew up to be one of the outstanding students in our Christian college in the city of Hangzhou, about 90 miles south of Shanghai. And then he went up to Shanghai University, and when he was in the university, he used to come home every summer. And when he came home, he'd come to pay his respects. The Chinese students, of course, were always taught to pay respects to their teachers. And so he always looked upon me as his teacher and came to pay his respects to me. And after we'd had a cup of tea together, the usual Chinese custom, for which I was very thankful as an Englishman, and he would then bid me farewell, and off he'd go. When I'd ask him where he was going, he was going out into the country to stay for the summer with his relatives, and I never could find out what relatives he had in the North District, for he always went into the northern part of the countryside, whereas I understood from his parents that his relatives were all in the West. Nevertheless, at that time, I didn't question anything, and he went up into the hills, always came back looking well and trim, ready for his winter's work, went off, came and said goodbye to me again, off he'd go back to Shanghai University for his studies. There were rumors about him being a communist, or at least being an active leftist in the Shanghai University. And because I knew something of the boy's background, I lent my weight to plead for him when there were serious charges being made against him. And as a result, perhaps largely of what I said, he was let off at a time when, under the nationalists, communists were taken out and shot on the main street of the city, and their bodies were hung on the city wall as a warning to anybody who would go the communist way. And when the communists came in, took over, as I described to you yesterday, in the first 3 months, this boy was fated. It was about a week after the communists had come in, I received an invitation from the chief commissar, who was indeed my former friend, the head of the hydro plant, now the commissar. He sent me a personal invitation to come to witness the arrival of some heroes in the city. And so I went around to the offices, the government offices, and then I was taken with a group, and we stood and witnessed the victorious arrival of some of the revolution's heroes. And at the head of the column was my young friend, the son of the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, whom I had defended and who had been released from the charges of being a communist. And this boy came marching down the street, before him some banners and Chinese musical instruments and the beating of drums, and then behind him was a sedan chair with the top taken off, and in place of the cover they had put on there a little hand press. And this hand press was being brought down from the hills from a temple where he had used this little hand press during the summer months whilst he was supposedly on his holiday. He was up in the hills printing out communist handbills and pouring it down the hillside into our valley and into our city and district, communist propaganda. So had he spent his holidays. Now he was being honored as one of the heroes of this hour. And as he walked in front of this procession, over the top they had a big red banner right over the top of this machine and over his head. And it said on the banner, Shu Tzu Desheng Liao. That is, by this we conquered. By this we conquered. And this was the way indeed that the communists conquered. Their infiltration by literature was one of the most subtle and yet the most powerful of all the methods that the mind of man has devised for infiltrating the minds of others. And so, after they had satisfied their own initial stage of loosening up the community, causing everybody to relax, getting us all to tell something of our past, at least sufficient to incriminate us later, and also to tell sufficient about others, to surrender all the arms and ammunition, to institute reforms that made their regime look as if it was going to be an outstanding regime, and to secure the cooperation and commendation of the entire community, after they'd succeeded in doing this, then the curtain fell. And it was about 3 months that we experienced the communist utopia, so-called, or at least attempted utopia. But you see, it couldn't last. You couldn't go on giving out the grain that was in the granaries to satisfy the poor. You couldn't continue with such a false face. Eventually the truth had to come out. And then it was that they closed in on the people. Homes were sealed, stores were sealed. Anybody whose background showed that in any way whatsoever there might be reactionary thought to the communist way, or anybody whom they felt might resist them in any way, shape, or form, was then arrested. It may interest you to know that the first people to be executed in our city and district were lawyers. They said lawyers are parasites. That will comfort any lawyer who might happen to be here. They are bloodsuckers, they said. That was the Chinese word they used for them. They said these people suck the blood of the poor people and work only for the rich. Therefore, they must be liquidated. Dr. Schwarz uses the word murder, or put to death. Now, in the Chinese vocabulary, there's only one time that they use the word death. When they were using the word in China, at least, amongst the communists under whom I lived, They didn't put it in that way. They said they had to be swept away, and they called it sweeping the floor clean. And they had many illustrations of how the floor can be swept clean, and they used them. All the dirt that was left around by the capitalists, they were going to sweep it all away. And they did. They swept it out of their way, anything which would stand against them. Of course, they feared the lawyers because their minds were trained to resist foreign thought. And in consequence, they resisted what the communists said, and therefore they were the first to be liquidated. There were various categories that one by one were cleared out of the way. They have, of course, a list of categories published in a book called The Dark Side of the Moon. I can't recall the entire list, but you can get that book from different agencies. It's worth getting, The Dark Side of the Moon. I forget the name of the man. There's no author to it, really. It's the compilation of documents that were found on a dead man who was killed because he was trying to escape with these documents. I think it was from Romania at the time that he was escaping, and was a high diplomatic official. And in it, for the interest of at least one group among us here, you may be interested to know that all Christian workers, preachers, evangelists, secretaries of Christian organizations, of whatever form they may be, are 13 on the list for liquidation when the American continent is taken over. And so they started their liquidations. It was then that they set up these people's courts that I described, in which I described at least in part yesterday. And one of these was set up outside our front door. The platform had its back to our boys' school wall. They took the great fan-shaped playground, which had been originally purchased by Dr. Hudson Taylor, the founder of the China Inland Mission in China, and they took this playground, which went right out to the boundary of the river that skirted the city and also was the boundary of our campus. And on the far side of this little fast-running stream, they built themselves a grandstand. And in this grandstand, something like the grandstands at our baseball diamonds on this side of the world, either end of it, they had a machine gun emplacement. And in this grandstand sat all the officials and the officials in training to witness the executions. When the temple bells, which were commandeered by them, as well as the church bells and every other kind of bell that was used in organizations throughout the district, all the bells started to ring everywhere. It was no longer the sound of calling people to church or to worship for one religion or another, but it was the call to the people's courts. And everybody knew when they heard the bells begin to ring, they knew that a people's court was being convened. It wasn't very long, once the curtain had fallen, that the children and the general populace was educated by public speaker systems and by lecturers of every kind, that whenever the bells rang, one member from every family, one representative from every family of the entire district, must at once make preparations to proceed to the execution ground. And there they had to register. And then the children soon learned that they, when they heard the bells, had to go down to the school, to their own local school. And there they were given little white gowns, trimmed with red trimming, weighted down with pebbles, so that it would sway as they danced along the streets with the sensuous communist dance that they had been taught, something like two steps forward and one back. And so they advanced with their little gown swaying as they went, loaded with these pebbles around the bottom. And with little red hats, white hats with a little red bobble on the top. And these children were going down. The reason for white, of course, is because of death. In China, we use white at a funeral and red at a wedding. And so they would be in what were mourning clothes, literally. And these children then were taken down to the gates of the prison. And there they were given the ropes and the chains on which to drag the prisoners down to the execution ground and drag them over the platform and leave them with the chains on them, chanting as they went and singing. And then it was that they sang their cry, Sa, 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 Sana Fan Dong Zaba, Sa, Sa, Sa. And you have no conception of the terrific emotional experience of listening to several thousand little children's voices crying out, more or less in unison, as they tramped past, dragging the prisoners down the streets, calling out, kill, 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 kill the reactionary, kill, 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 and a sensuous little tune that they sang to it as they danced and jigged. And when, in the first days, as they brought these prisoners down, many of them their own relatives, they were forced to stand in the foreground. They had an area cordoned off so that when the students got the prisoners down there, the students filled up the front area of this big execution ground. And all the parents standing away in the back as far as the river, and behind them, the officials sitting in the grandstand. And then these children had to witness the execution of their own parents, and many of them participate in it. And in those early days, it was our unhappy lot to witness as many as a dozen little children collapse, go into convulsive fits, and from which they never recovered. And after the executions were over and the people's courts had been disbanded, the Chinese themselves were not allowed to touch their own people, and my wife and I were called out to pick up these little corpses and bring them in and spread them out on our front lawn, cover them with bamboo matting, to await their parents to come and identify them and take their little bodies away. But I want to tell you that in the 2 years that we lived under communism, less than 18 months after this, when we came out, already many of the children who had survived the early ordeals had become so hardened that they no longer collapsed. Became so hardened that they would climb over one another in their earnestness to get onto the platform, to dip their fingers in the blood of the victims and wipe it onto their white tunics, because the next day in school, the child that had the greatest number of strokes of blood on their tunic was given, on their white gown, these were given the prizes by the leaders of their communist classes. Prizes such as the life of of Stalin or Lenin and the history of the revolution in bindings much more expensive than the bindings of our Bibles. A treasure that a Chinese child who treasures even just a little exercise book, when he gets his first exercise book, goes to his daddy and says, Daddy, or to his granddaddy and says, Grandpa, will you get me a piece of silk to wrap up my book? He thinks so much of it, so as to keep it from the atmosphere and to stop it from becoming grubby. And these children, treasuring as they did every sheet of paper, to be given prizes such as this, it wasn't long before the communists secured their cooperation. And when we spoke about it, when afterwards we were in indoctrination, and along with two Roman Catholic priests, I challenged the communists, why? Why do you have to bring the children into this? These little ones witnessing the things that they're having to witness. And they laughed at us. And they said, you still don't understand. These children will be the forerunners of the world revolution. These children have to be hardened to the sight of the shedding of blood. They've got to know that shedding blood is not wrong if it is at the command of the Communist Party. And it is necessary for the eventual revealing of a super race. And some of these children's children will be members of that super race that shall rule the earth as it should be ruled. And so these children were being hardened. I lived through seven purges in the 2 years that I was under communism. You have no conception of what a purge is like. You read some of the things that happened in Hungary. I watched that happen seven times over. They withdraw their restraints. They encourage you to speak against them. Just recently, you remember, your newspapers here in Los Angeles were telling you about the fact that out in China they were loosening up on the university professors and encouraging the educationalists to speak against the communist regime and to criticize them. They said it'll be mutual criticism. Criticize the regime. Help us to put ourselves right. Tell us the things that are wrong and we'll adjust ourselves. And they got them to talk and they loosened up. And I watched that happen again and again, seven times over. And it's amazing. You clutch at any straw under conditions of such terrible fear, because when blood begins freely to flow, and when you don't know who will be the next one to be arrested, when you don't know whether it's your turn next, And when men and women are trying to incriminate others as fast as they can, so that they won't be incriminated themselves, it's a terrible situation of fear and dread that descends upon the minds of the community. And in this, suddenly to be told, now look here, it was all a mistake. These people who did these things, these communist leaders who did these things, never should have done them. It was all a mistake. And therefore, we have new leaders coming in now, and you can freely criticize and tell us what your troubles are, and we'll put them right. And I've watched the people rise up as they felt it was going to be a new regime and a new opportunity to start all over again. And then as soon as they got all the information they wanted, and they found out the people who were still reactionary in the community, then there will be another sweep of arrests. Just as 2 months ago, there were over 350,000 educational leaders in China arrested, and so far as we know, they have by and large been liquidated by this time. That's one of the liquidations that Mr. Fred Schwarz was speaking about, and which you'll describe tomorrow, eventually gets right to the very top, where even the very men who are doing the liquidating can be liquidated by the man who's at the pivotal point of the communist regime. And so I went through 7 of these purges, and they were terrible days. It was about 6 or 8 weeks after the curtain had fallen, when the indoctrination courses were going apace for everybody. People had been told that in one form or another you have to attend an indoctrination course. There were indoctrination courses for tradesmen, indoctrination courses for professionals, indoctrination courses for housewives, indoctrination courses for the high school students, college students, all in their different and separate groupings. They had these special courses. One morning, just before breakfast, quite a while before breakfast, when we were still upstairs in our bedrooms, there was a great knocking at the door, and I was called downstairs and found myself in the presence of several communist leaders, each of whom I recognized by this time as being our local leaders. And one of them, as the spokesman, said to me, "Mr. Millen, you have to go with us." Well, I said, "What do you want? What are you after now?" And he said, "We've been instructed that you are to attend an indoctrination course." And I said, "Well, I think there must be some mistake. I've already had contact with your leaders, and it has been agreed that I am not a native of China. Neither am I naturalized. I have never taken out Chinese papers, although I would have been entitled to do so by the number of years that I had lived in the country. I am not a Chinese, nor have I status in this country. Therefore, they agreed that I was not to attend an indoctrination course." He said, "Our instructions are that you're to go with us." I said, "Well, then I appeal to Mr. Ling, the local official. I'd like to speak to him on the telephone here and ask him what it's all about." He said, "Mr. Millen, our instructions are that you're to go with us." I said, "Well, in that case, then, I appeal to the consul in Shanghai." And I said, "I was only speaking to him on the telephone yesterday. Let me speak to him again about this." They said, "Mr. Millen, our instructions are you're to go with us." And with that, he took a revolver from his pocket and pointed at me. And when you've got a revolver pointing at your stomach, I discovered that you don't hesitate very long. And so I said, "Well, I can see that you're very determined about this. Very well, there's nothing else for me to do. I shall have to go with you. May I say goodbye to my wife?" They said, "You instruct your wife to bring your clothes down here, and then you change into your clothes." I was still in my pajamas, and then you come with us. So I called my wife, and she brought my clothes down, and I changed, and then they took me off. We went out through the back of our campus, through the courtyard outside of the hydro plant next door, out into a lane behind it, and through into the temple, which adjoined our campus and adjoined the hydro plant. And in the back of this old temple was to be our indoctrination class. It was an old, disused outhouse, a description of which I've never yet found adequate. It's something like an old latrine, a lean-to at the back of the temple, where they stored away all the fertilizer for the rice fields, not all of it, but what was secured in the temple and sold by the priests for a means of gain, a means of livelihood, when the rice was being planted in the spring and summer. And this fertilizer, of course, was not fertilizer such as you have on this side of the world, artificial fertilizer. It was human excretion, stored up in a great big earthenware pots about 3 or 4 feet round in diameter across the opening and about 3 or 4 feet high, and then they sink these down into the ground, dig holes and sink them into the ground so that they're about 6 or 8 inches sticking out of the ground. That gives them strength. And they fill these things with this human excretion and hold it until the summer, when they come in and fill up the pots that they carry out on the bamboo poles, carry it out into the field and fertilize the little rice plants and make them grow. That's their only way of getting two crops in the year from the rice. Now, you have no idea what that's like. These vats become just simply seething masses of maggots, just a seething mass, big fat maggots crawling over one another. And I have seen two men at least. The third, I didn't actually witness his execution, but I've seen at least two men thrown in and their heads held beneath the maggots with a bamboo carrying pole until they expire. In this place, with all its stench, we were to be put between these vats. Down either side were two rows of these pots, and in the center, the area in the center, they put out little trestles, something like carpenter's trestles, with enough room for two men to sit on each little trestle, only about 3 or 4 inches wide. You try sometime sitting on a 3 or 4 inch board for a while and see how you get along. You'll find you're not nearly as well padded as you thought you were. And we were to be in this indoctrination class, we soon learned, from 6 a.m. in the morning, approximately, until about 10 o'clock at night. And there was only one break and relief from sitting on those little forms, and that was around 12 noon, when they were to take us out into the courtyard, give us a bowl of cold rice and one bowl of cold vegetables between eight men, and we were then to have a walk around the inner courtyard after we'd gobbled down our lunch, and then back into the indoctrination class again until night. That was the only break we had. Otherwise, all we could do was to get up and cross across to the corner of the room where they had a little pot with water in it and a little bamboo cup, the bamboo scoop, and everybody drinking out of the same scoop, so that you can well imagine that I never dared go near that scoop to touch that water because of the conditions. Well, this was the setting of our indoctrination class. We were composed of a group of 30 to 40 Chinese during most of the period, and two French Roman Catholic priests, an Austrian Jewish doctor who was Orthodox, an Orthodox Jew, an escapee actually from Germany, and then most of the people in the group were actually of a religious background. This particular course, so far as we could see, was an attempt to ridicule religion and to break down the background of the religious groups that were represented. The system, they told us, was to take approximately about 3 months. They estimated it would take about 1 month for each part of the course. In the beginning, of course, they didn't reveal the whole plan to us, but now I can look back upon the whole thing and remember at least parts of it that make a fairly complete picture. The first month was spent in trying to tear down the past. That's a smaller phrase as I can find to describe it. The second part was for the purpose of building up the present. And the third month, or part, or phase, or stage, as they call it, was for the purpose of proving the trainee. There never was a more real imitation of what God does with the human life that is yielded to him. For the man or the woman who comes sincerely to God, whomsoever they may be, yielding their life and seeking his forgiveness, the first thing he does is to deal with the past and wipes it out. Isn't that the whole message of our gospel? And then God is very concerned with building up a new present in the life, and is very concerned with a practical and witnessing future in a Christian life. In the first month, under this indoctrination course of the communists, in the morning periods of that first month, we were told that they were going to deal with the subconscious background of each individual present. This is how they described us. They used two circles. They said man has a body and a mind. That's all a man consists of. And therefore, if you can control his mind, you can control his body. Any talk about a spiritual part of man is all wrong. Therefore, if man has no spiritual part to him, he has no need of a God. And therefore, all this religious talk about gods is all wrong, regardless of what the religion is. This wasn't a direct attack upon Christianity. This wasn't a direct attack upon Mohammedanism, or upon Buddhism, or upon Catholicism, or anything else. This was a direct attack upon any religion in any way, shape, or form, which they categorized as, of course, an ideology which claimed the allegiance and the loyalty of the devotee. And it was against this that they were striking. So I didn't understand it then. I didn't understand communism then, as I understand it now. And so they said, what we have to do is to deal with this mind. Now they said, this mind of yours has two parts. It has a subconscious and a conscious. A subconscious mind and a conscious mind. This is what we call the recollection. And this part, the subconscious. And of course that is true. It is true that we have such a mind. It is true that God created us with a subconscious and a conscious mind. And they said, now you see all the impressions from the earliest days of your childhood, from your little tiny child, all the impressions that you've received have all gone down into the subconscious, and they're all there, and they have formed habits in your life. And as a result of what is inside your subconscious, you react to any given circumstance or any new thing that comes into your life, and the result is that you form a habit. Now they said that's all wrong. Because you had a wrong education, because you have a wrong background culture, because you have been brought up under a capitalistic system which has given you the wrong subconscious background, today you formed habits which are entirely wrong. And therefore what we've got to do is we've got to wash out that subconscious. And that was when the word brainwashing came into existence. It was first used in China. It was the word Xi Nao, to wash the brain. And it was then that the world started to talk about it. Prior to this, it had only been called changing the mind, or indoctrination. It was in China that first it was called brainwashing. And so the brainwashing process was to get rid of this subconscious background. And you know, there's a great deal in this. Do you realize how much your subconscious affects your life? Do you realize how much there is in the fact that God gave you a subconscious mind, and how very dependent we all are upon it? Our Western civilization and our systems of education develop the individual. How do they do it? By giving us a background which is calculated to bring out the best that is in that individual. How do they do it? By putting in a background. It must have certain stabilized factors in it which will produce a certain character and depth of character, according to the extent that in the development of that inner man, shall I call it, as a result of it, there is a difference in the character development of the individual. Now, the communists have seen this very, very clearly. You know, one of the things that I'm terribly sorry about is that the church today has very largely lost sight of this amazing factor. 20 years ago, I can recall, 30, I'm sorry, it must be 30 years ago, I can recall very, very well how that as soon as my life was transformed by the mighty transforming power of the Holy Spirit of God, when I came to that climax in my life, when I saw myself as lost before God, and knew that there was only one way that I must turn to Him, and my life was transformed, very simply in the words of the Scripture, the words of the Christ, of which surely I shouldn't be ashamed, I was born again. And when my life was transformed, Christ came in. I can recall how in those days I was thankful that there were those who impressed upon me that I was to get down to studying the Word of God. Now today we're not doing that. And the result is that we are not utilizing the very thing that the communists speak about in the way it was meant to be used. How many Sunday school teachers have come along to me and have said, Mr. Millen, how difficult it is to get the little children to memorize the Word of God? How many older people have come along and said to me, why, Mr. Millen, I find it so difficult to concentrate in reading the Bible? I don't care how much you feel you can't concentrate. I don't care how little you can take in. You keep on taking in. It's a question of systematically getting at the Word of God. Let me explain it to you this way, how important this is. The communists said, we're going to wash that out. How will we do it? We'll take a look at your habits first, and we'll take these habits and we'll analyze them and criticize them, and we'll show that you formed the wrong habits, therefore you had the wrong background teaching. Some of the habits that they uncovered were rather ugly. Some of these men had done things, had habits in their lives, of which the communists already knew very well. But they made them openly confess themselves. And they had to come up and stand on the one clean place in the room, which was a little dais at the back of the room with a whitewashed square behind it. They'd have to stand on this little dais and then literally confess to things in their lives that were of which they were rightly ashamed. And then they were analyzed. Why did they do these things? And then they go back and back into their school days even and find that even when they were in school, they were started indulging in bad habits, that somebody there in the school had spread an evil habit amongst them and they'd caught it up and they'd gone on and they'd been at it all their lives. And it had just grown and grown as the days went by. But it wasn't only these kind of habits they got at. But the communists also got at our religious habits, and in this particular group, of course, it was the religious habits that they wanted to deal with. They went after these French priests because of their rosaries, their reading of the rosary. Why did they read a rosary? And it was astonishing how difficult it was for them to explain why they used the rosary. And, of course, their confidence was shaken, and I'm not surprised that it was. They got after me as to why I read the Bible. Well, of course, that was fairly easy for me to explain to them. And of course, they couldn't accept my explanation. But I'll tell you in a moment, in a little while, how wonderfully God used that. Then they got after me about the habit of prayer. And they laughed at me when they stood me up on the dais and said, now you tell us, why do you pray? And then I told them why I prayed, because it was the command of my Lord, and because I had discovered a wonderful communion with God, and I could speak to the eternal. Why, you know, we've been breaking the sound barrier long before scientists ever thought of breaking the sound barrier. And, of course, they couldn't understand those kind of things. What they were out for was to ridicule the religion. They said, well, you say that there's power in this prayer. Does this God that you talk about, can he hear what you have to say? And I said, why, yes. All through my Christian life, I could give you 100 illustrations of the wonderful way that God hears prayer. Now, I know that today there are lots of people even on this side of the world. They don't believe that God answers prayer. My friend, God does answer prayer, and in the 20th century, God answers prayer. And as I stood my ground on the matter, they said, well, prove it to us. I gave them some illustrations. They weren't satisfied with that. They said, you prove it to us here. If you say God can answer prayer, you ask him something now. Let us see whether he can answer. And this man just went for me, almost frothing at the mouth as he poured out his venom on me. And I could do no else because he made me kneel down on this dais. Now, he said, you pray, and you see whether your God hears any prayers. And I didn't know what to pray. You know, lots of people say, how do I pray? You can't pray from a piece of paper, you know. No such thing as that. Real prayer comes out of sincere need and desire. That's why Christ commended that publican when he stood up in the temple and beat his breast as he bowed his head and said, oh, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. That's the kind of prayer that God hears. It comes right from deep down within the spirit of man. You don't think about it. You don't organize it. You don't plan your prayers. You just talk to God. That's real prayer. And I could do no other. I just talked to him, and I didn't know what I was going to say. And I found myself not thinking at all. I found myself saying aloud the words, oh, Lord, give this man an understanding in some way. I don't know how you'll do it, Lord, but show him that you answer prayer, even if it's necessary to make him blind to do it. And God put scales across that man's eyes. And as I was bowed on my knees in that indoctrination class, the man went blind. And it was some little time later before he recovered in any measure whatsoever. Then he was struck very sick, almost to death's door. I want to tell you that they never ridiculed again the question of whether God could answer prayer. Even the communist becomes superstitious when he comes up against anything which is outside the realm of his materialistic theories. When he comes up against anything which breaks the circle of his thought, he's lost and he doesn't know what to do about it. But I want to thank God, whilst I leave out most of the details because we've only a very short time, I want to thank God that afterwards it was my wonderful privilege to point that man to Christ. And I was present when he sealed his testimony with his blood. And because the Communist Party had decreed that he had become a reactionary, he was taken to the execution platform. And I was brought out to witness what they did with him. It wasn't very pleasant. They took sharpened chopsticks and drove them up his nostrils into his brain. But he went into the presence of the king. He went into the presence of God. There's a day coming when I shall rejoice with him. It was a sorrowful sight. It always is. But yet you know what a wonderful thing to have a faith that sees beyond the grave, that sees beyond the material. This is what the communists can't understand. They can't understand such things. Why? Because they rule out the spiritual, that's why. And I don't care whether it's a communist or whether it's any kind of materialist, anywhere in the world around. As soon as he rules God out, why, of course he's got nothing left. He becomes simply a vacuum. And you can't be a vacuum. For when a man makes himself a vacuum as regards God, the devil comes in with all his power, and that's what's happened with communism. The most devilish thing that ever there was. But they were determined to get at this background and to wash it away by dealing with the habits and then proving that it was because we had a wrong background that then they could show us that we had formed wrong habits. Now, to change those habits, let go of your background. And all the time it was let go of it. Let go of it. And you'll be astonished at the success they had with a lot of these men.